everyone. Welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their films funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. Our Spring 2021 Narrative and Documentary Funding Contests are about to begin. They open next Tuesday, May 4th, 2021, so don't forget to submit your pitch. Check us out at thefilmfund.co to enter your one-sentence pitch for a chance to win up to $10,000 to make your film. And we want to remind listeners the contests happen regularly, so if you are listening at a later date, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today we have Don Finelli back on the show, writer, actor, producer of the Film Fund winner, Sunday Dinner. Don, thanks for coming on the show again.
Yeah, man.
Could you give us a brief reminder of who you are, what you do?
I don't know anymore. I don't know who I am anymore after this year. I got into this whole thing, not by accident, but yeah, I did engineering in college and then kind of fell into the acting thing and improv through the Upright Citizens Brigade. So I was kind of making a go as an actor, then went into acting school and, you know, was just doing a lot of small things in New York for a while, then auditioning for stuff and hitting up some TV shows, little movies here and there. And then started writing more. And got into this like short films team at the UCB, and we started pumping out little short films. I really loved the process, and that's where I wrote Sunday Dinner, but it took about 7 years to make.
So was that in New York or LA, did you say?
That was in New York, yeah.
That was New York. Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you make the transition from engineering to what you do now? Because I mean I changed, I guess, earlier than you did, but I started out as an engineering major and basically hated calculus and was like, screw this, I'm going
to... I think we went to the same college too, Thomas.
We did. Shout out Lehigh.
Shout out to Lehigh, yeah. One of the best engineering schools in the country, and I'm not doing that to my own horn. I did not do well there.
I almost did not do well there, and then I made those smart moves right before it hit my GPA. I was like, let's do
it. The math stuff was okay. A lot of the other stuff, not so much. The funny thing looking back, right? Like when you're going through it, you feel like there's like something wrong with you, and there is, but sometimes you don't have the passion for the thing. So the classes I did well in were more of the design classes, more of like the artistic classes. I was always the one to give like presentations. So I was always the one to kind of defer to other people to like do some of the heavy duty calculations and research. And then I was able to kind of look at it and put it all together and be like, I can make sense of this data and present it. So I think I always had like a teaching quality in me. I like to teach. I'd like to present. I was acting when I was younger, like in all the school plays and stuff like that. And then I was in a couple bands. I was in a band in high school. I was in a band in college.
Oh,
so I was like performing. It's just when I, you know, got to college that kind of, you know, it was the, that's fun to do on the side kind of thing. I was playing baseball there too at Lehigh. And
oh, nice. What,
for a couple years. What's that?
Do you play an instrument?
I play guitar and piano. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
So, you know, it was always in the, it was always around, and you know, so I did some engineering stuff after college and really just was like, there's like a 2-3 year period where I was really just bouncing around. I was sold life insurance and was a headhunter and then became like this like permanent substitute teacher in a school in North Bergen, New Jersey. And so I would like, so I basically didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. My dad's friend was a actor. And he was teaching at a college. And so I kind of met up with him and he's like, hey, let's, you know, take a dollar bus ride into the city and I'm taking brush up course. You know, he was like 50 something at the time. I'm taking brush up courses at the UCB theater. So take a look at it. Like you can take a class, get on stage in 8 weeks and see if you like it. See if you like acting, like see if you like doing it. Like there's no script. Just see if you like being on stage with other people in front of an audience. And that was such good advice, you know, just like to dip your toe in. So you don't have to, I mean, classes then were not that as expensive they were recently. So it's just like a good way to spend a couple hundred bucks just to see if you like what you think is, you know, sometimes what's in our head is not the reality of, oftentimes right. is not the reality of how it's going to go or what's happening. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I made the transition. There was a rocky 2 or 3 year period where I really was kind of trying to figure out what to do with my life. And, mm-hmm. and while I was taking classes, I was still trying to kind of figure things out. That at least I found something I was just like, well, this feels right. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stop, I just went through something similarly. We, one of the very first podcast episodes, I mentioned we were doing something called FF Branded, and it was going to be an ad agency through the film fund. We basically use this community to create branded content.
Yeah.
Quick segue here. This is not about you at all, but just the finding out what you want to do in your life. But basically,
no, I
put that on hiatus because I was doing cold calls and trying to get sales. And we made one video. It came out really, really well. But I just hated the sales process. I was on LinkedIn sending people messages.
Yeah.
And like I can do sales. I had a job offer for a sales job out of college. I decided not to take it. I hated it. So I was like, all right, I'm miserable. I need to take a step back. I started storyboarding a short that I'm shooting now this summer. Awesome. I was just so much happier. I felt like this is what I should be doing.
Where are you? Where are you from? Are you from like the tri-state area?
I'm from outside of Philly.
Okay.
Right, so now I live in Philly.
I just feel like
kind of like where Villanova's at.
I feel like people in that area, right? Like Philly to Boston. There's something about, like, you know, family or friends that are in the, like, bit, like, sales or finance, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you felt like this, but I felt like I should be good at this because, like, everyone around me is, like, wearing a suit and tie and is on the phone, and I grew up watching Boiler Room and Wall Street, and I was like, this looks,
I watched Wall Street.
And I can do it, I can act, mm-hmm. you know, like, when I'm on the phone with someone, I can really bullshit a little bit and really kind of believe what I'm selling them. But at the end of the day, I felt like a fraud. I was like, I feel much worse trying to convince people to do something. Mm-hmm. It's just not me. I'd rather, like, the acting part feels fine, but the result of it felt really, like, gross to me. So,
yeah.
I don't know if you felt something similar. I don't know if it's like, I doubt it's just a tri-state area thing. I think it's just because mm-hmm. I know so many people that, you know, got into finance, and a lot of my parents' friends were in finance and New York City. And it was the big, like, mm-hmm. on the phone people that could talk to anybody. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I wish I could do that. But like in my bones, I hated cold calling. I don't know anybody that really loves it. I think you kind of have to be a psychopath. And I worked with some people that were kind of psychopathic.
Well, I've read there's a certain, I forget what the actual number is, but a large, like a significant percentage of people who work in financial services industry are actually psychopaths.
Yeah. Just like the empathy thing, they can shut down, right? Like they can shut down. Mm-hmm. They see it as a game. And listen, if that's what you want to do and you like that hustle and bustle and you like that lifestyle, again, for me, I think it was more in my head, that sounds awesome. And I should be able to do this because everyone I know does this. And
that was me with engineering. All the quote unquote smart kids in high school were in these AP science courses. So I was like, all right, I'll do that. I'll go to Lehigh, get an engineering degree, because that's what I saw the smart kids doing. It was that or they were going to finance. And I got there and I just hated it. I was like, not for me. So back to Sunday dinner. You wrote that at UCB.
Yeah.
So give us a brief, I had Kevin do this too. Give us a brief overview of what Sunday dinner is about in your words.
Sure. Yeah. It's about, a bunch of siblings, Italian American siblings, coming together after the death of their parents to have their traditional Sunday dinner, together again for the first time. And one of them has this kind of secret that is going to upend this kind of beloved tradition, especially after the death of their parents. And it's one of the brothers is comes out as a vegan. So can't have the meat, can't have the cheeses, these things that are very near and dear to Italian Americans' hearts. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the overview of it. I maybe said this on the last time, but I kind of come from a traditional versus progression hang up in my writing. I'm always like, I really love the traditions of my culture. I love traditions of other cultures. I think they're strong and sacred things that make us feel connected, make us feel part of something bigger. I also think sometimes we're a little too stuck in the past. I also love progression. I also love progressiveness. I like pushing boundaries and not just doing something because we've done it before. I like to question why. So I have this big internal conflict, especially, you know, second generation. I'm sure a lot, I've talked to a lot of first generation folks about this too, about like how the assimilation part, the progression part versus the, you know, the sacred nature of what connects you to your culture, because there's something so primal and special about that. So that's what I put into, that was my main kind of theme writing this.
When it's definitely universal, like you were saying, different cultures. I mean, talked, if you go back and listen to the episode we had with Kevin, we kind of talk about how that dinner could happen at any family table, regardless of what, you know, nationality or descent.
That's the reaction we got. I don't know if he told you this on Omeletto. There was all these comments. We had such awesome comments of just being like, oh, that's my family, but Haitian. That's my, you know what I mean? That's my Cuban family.
It's crazy.
That's like, it's, it was just so funny to be like, oh yeah, this is kind of a universal thing. And I know a lot of my friends growing up, you know, they're different cultures, Korean and stuff like that. So it's like, everyone has a Sunday dinner. They all have some sort of coming together, like a family coming together day or day of the month or something with like external family. If you're lucky enough, you know, some people aren't lucky enough to have that or have that culture in their life, or maybe not lucky, but you know, just they don't have that. But I think anybody that comes from a specific culture, you know, America is this huge melting pot. So I think there's a lot of different cultures here. I think there's something. And even if you're, you know, from the Mayflower, there's something, you know, there's some sort of like tradition that your family probably had.
Absolutely.
That it's like, we don't want to lose this. But also, is this, can we change it? Or can we update it? Is that,
and that's
like,
where the progressiveness comes in.
Yeah.
That you were talking about.
Yeah, that's where
that's
that comes in.
So talking about the YouTube comments, watching them and watching people relate to your film, what was that like having the release online with COVID? I know you would have preferred in-person festivals. I think we all would have. But were there any interesting things that you saw happen online that you liked that maybe you wouldn't have gotten?
I think, you know, it's just you lose the, I'm much better in person with like one-on-one with people and talking about stuff. That's just sometimes this divide is a little bit difficult for me to interact.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a wall, like we're literally talking through something else. And I feel that viscerally. So yes, I was bummed that I've never sat with this, the film got into a ton of festivals, which I was so happy about. We never all sat with like people around watching it.
Yeah.
And listening to that collective laughter or, you know.
Yeah. If you want to live vicariously through me watching your film, I went to Garden State Film Festival a few weeks back and watched it. And there were people there. And I got a great reaction.
Oh, that's awesome.
Makes you feel better.
I was literally in New Jersey at that time, but I had something else to do at that. Like when it was playing, I was like, oh, I was like
was
literally going to be
like
down in Asbury Park like the next day. It was just like the timing didn't work out. I was like, if this was on a Sunday, you know, but that's awesome to hear. That's very, very cool to hear. Yeah. The online stuff though, you know, doing it through doing that release on that platform, Omeletto is such a bigger platform. I was, I was very surprised. Like, about how many comments that people had, and they were like mostly positive. I was you know, you see, I've put out so much dumb shit online.
Oh yeah.
And you know, the comments are all over the place. I don't care. I mean, I know everyone says like, oh, you really care. I'm just, I don't like, everyone has their own opinion, and I tried to please everybody at one point in my life. That just doesn't work. So
no,
I was pleasantly surprised at those comments though. It was really cool how it touched some people, or I think what we just touched on before, seeing how there was other people that were like, oh, this is my family, but this culture,
kind of coming
that was
together.
The coolest part, I think. Yeah.
What's also cool is I just pulled up the link. It is almost at 100,000 views.
Oh, on my
YouTube
gosh.
On Leto page. Right now it's at 99,917.
Wow. That's crazy.
So that's awesome.
That's
yeah, and
awesome.
It's also,
yeah.
On, it's also on our YouTube page on the Film Fund's website if you want to check that out. We don't have 100,000 views, but we have some that are getting a few hundred, getting up there, maybe 1,000.
That's so cool, though. And listen, like, more people now have seen this than they would have in the festivals, right?
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
It's that's also pretty cool. So I missed that kind of camaraderie feeling and talking to other filmmakers that way. And some of the film festivals were very good at connecting and interviewing and hey, here's a block of people. So you got to kind of talk to people and see other people's films. I watched a ton of other people's films, some really, really awesome films out there. So it's like, there's so many other people that worked really hard on art, wanted to put it out there for, you know, to feel that collective feeling of being like, here's my art. That's all that scary feeling to kind of put something out there and be like, how do people react? I also, because of improvising for so long, I'm so used to just kind of going out there. Here it is, you know?
Right. Was there a lot of improv on this production?
There was a little bit. We tried to keep it as close to the script as possible, but I was like, we'd be foolish. I have some of the best improvisers sitting around me. Some of the best
UCB
writers.
People?
Yeah, they're all UCB people. They're, okay. I would say, you know, Andrew Law, you know, is written on The Good Place. And I mean, he is a legit awesome writer and he's a phenomenal actor. So, you know, getting him, Mike Antonucci, I've known for so long. This is his family, you know, too. So it's like, and then some. So I knew like Nooch would kill it. But he's a writer, you know, like Mary Holland, unbelievable talent, you know, longtime UCB LA performer that I got to know over the years being out here. And then Gabrus, it's like, I mean, it was a murderer's row of improvisers. Like, these were some of the better improvisers out there. So I'd be stupid not. So, yeah, of course, we kept some unbelievable one-liners from everybody. And then would just go like, oh, and I was like, listen, these some things are very important to hit. And then some things like put them in your words. And then some things is like, let's just, can we just do a take or two where we're just rattling off?
Yeah.
What does this food smell like to you? What does it look like to you? Like, and then we'll just. You know, do six takes of that and quick, you know, 30 seconds and then just pick the funniest ones. Like, let's just keep going. And we all, we always have like a, I think sometimes improvisers have a one-up nature to each other. So there was a fun, like, how crazy can we.
Meaning what they want to like compete with one another almost.
Yeah. Like, let's see like how I never got the vibe of the competing thing. It's just like, ooh, that's funny. Let me try to top that.
Let's build on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's build off of that. That's really funny. It's not like, oh, fuck you. I'm going to.
Yeah.
It's building. It's that yes. And attitude of just like building off the last thing the person said and not negating it. So, yeah. So I'd be foolish not to have had some improvising moments. I don't think I improvised at all, like my lines. I think my lines were in my bones, though. I mean, I've been reading the goddamn thing for 7 years, so just like I knew how I performed it was probably improvised, but I think that's how I like to act. So
did you not want to, and I don't know if you do anyway outside of this project, but did you always envision someone else directing it?
Always envisioned someone else directing it just because I had no confidence and in myself to direct this thing and just never directed anything before. So I was like, my goal was to really pay attention and try to be a part of the process. So that's what I talked to Kevin about. Like, how do you do this and that? And, you know, asking questions. And I would think maybe the next thing I would like to do, I'd like to take a bigger role in it, but also wouldn't want to do it completely by myself. And you learn that there's different directors, right? There's some directors that are coming out of the cinematography world that are really focused on how things are looking. And then there's directors that are coming out of the acting world that are really focused on like the, hey, what are we saying here? What is the purpose of this? Like, why are we doing this, this and that? And then there's like the brilliant in-betweeners that know what it's going to look like and then can also prime the set so it feels new every time in a way, you know what I mean? Because it, you know,
actors.
You can read. Yeah, just you could read, I think, when things have been filmed for belabored. A while. Yeah, belabored. Yeah.
100%. So how did, I know we talked a little bit about this. You said you wrote it at UCB. You're talking about your family growing up and different cultures, but was there a moment where you were like, okay, this is the concept for Sunday dinner? How did you come up with the actual concept? You talked a little bit about it in the last episode in terms of like going out to LA and coming back.
Yeah. I don't know if there was like, it was so long ago. So it was, it's really hard to like come up with that moment. I just remember every time I would, there was just a phase of my life where I was getting like kind of super healthy. I cook a lot. You know, I grew up cooking. My parents both cook. My, you know, my whole family cooks. If food is so important to us. But I also noticed that like there was illness in family and extended family. And there was, just hereditary diseases. There was things that were genetic that, you know, possibly could be preventable. And so anyway, I took a deep dive into like getting super healthy and really focusing on what we were eating, where it's coming from. So I kind of went a little psychopathic. I never became vegan. I didn't go there. I just thought like, well, what's I'm kind of insane right now. What's the most insane version of me that I can kind of bring to the table that would juxtapose like the most extreme version of like my aunts and uncles, you know, that are like Jersey. We eat pasta and gravy, they call it, not sauce, right? They eat the gravy.
I grew up calling it gravy as well.
Gravy. Eat the gravy on Sundays, you know, and it's meatballs, it's sausage, it's brajol, it's pork neck, it's all the good meats just kind of soaking in there. So I remember this one. I don't remember like exactly when, but I remember just like even just trying to like convince my parents to buy like, if there's organic broccoli, Rob. And I was like, my parents are like, no one but us, I feel, eats broccoli. Yeah. No one even knows what that is, you know. Yeah, it's not even a broccoli, actually. Yeah, just get that shkadol. Yeah, eating shkadol and beans, the escarol and beans. So I just remember that. I remember their exhausted look, and their, you know, every time I would come home, I could feel they were like, oh Christ, you know, like here we go again. Like what's wrong with what we're cooking now, Don? You know what I mean?
Right.
To the point where I was like, all right, I got to back off a little bit. But there was like a 2-year period where I was a little high on my horse, a little obsessive. I think I was just like, my mom has MS. Like there was cancer in my family. I think I was just like, well, I'm kind of like the person that's like very proactive with it. Just been like, but if we can prevent it or at least damper it, like why wouldn't we be so gung ho to do this? And they were just like, you know, so I wanted to bring that passion to my character in the film of like, you know, and the thing was just like, you have to enjoy life though. You know what I mean? There was the counter was that I was like, yeah, but it's not going to be fun if you're sick, you know? So maybe I was just, I'm a little, hypochondriatic, or I don't know if that's a word, but, just maybe there was a fear, I guess. Because I saw the toll it took on family and friends that were had cancer and had diseases that I was like, they're not here anymore. It's so sad. You know, like, why not just change your diet a little bit and gain an extra day? I would love to gain an extra day with some of the people that I lost, you know? So that's kind of the raw place where it's coming from.
So it comes from a pretty serious place.
It definitely comes from a serious place. The vessel of me is probably annoying with it.
probably, and that's where the comedy comes in.
I think that's where the comedy would come in, is because I don't deliver the message well.
I think all the best comedies usually come from, you know, serious issues. Like anyone starting out with an idea that's like a goofy idea, that's generally not what is funny. Like I feel like the best comedies, you know,
it depends. It really depends. I mean the places where the things I find most funny are coming from a truthful place. They're grounded in reality, but also it's like, I don't know, I'll watch Tim and Eric all day. You know what I mean? Which is, but even then you can kind of dissect that. I mean, Tim is, they're comedic geniuses, I think. And their editor is amazing. So, you know, I think that's just kind of wackadoodle. But I think you could always kind of dissect anything and just be like, well, what's this actually saying? Or
yeah, what's it actually about?
Yeah, what's this actually about here?
That happened to me on a film I'm in pre-pro for right now. Hopefully we're shooting in late June. But just give you a very brief overview just to explain it. It's called The Toms. In a world run by Toms, a man named Tim tries to infiltrate their secret society because he feels that his name's close enough. So it's this goofy idea, right? This stupid idea. It's like this dystopian thing.
Yeah.
You know, on the surface, it's like there's no substance to this. And then, you know, talking to... She hasn't signed on fully yet, but the production designer who I've been talking with, and she asked me on the phone, I was like, so what's the message you're trying to get across with this film? And I was like, oh my God, it's about the lengths people will go to fit in.
Yep.
And, you know, peer pressure and insecurity and wanting
that's
to be
what I was thinking
accepted
right when you said it.
And belonging. And it's like, I just met all these people named Tom in my life in like a 1-2 month period, and it was overwhelming and it felt like in the Twilight Zone, but it was really coming from that bigger, like, do I belong question. Yeah. And I just wanted to bring that up, one, to plug my own shit, two, to show that even when you do have a goofy idea, there is kind of a greater truth to it, like you were saying.
Totally.
I think that's
even if you don't see it right away, too. You know, like, start with the goofy idea. Like, sometimes I think I can see when people start with the message and then build off of the message, and that can be brilliant, too. And but I think something, the seed of the idea, I like to start with I'd rather start with the goofy and then go, like, how do I rein in this chaos?
Yeah.
And you rein in the chaos, you think about the theme, like, and you're trying to think about, like, what are you trying to say here? What is this about? Because listen, we've seen many movies that there's kind of mixed messages, or like, I don't know what this is necessarily about. And some work, some don't. I think some of the better movies have like the simplest message, even if it's something we've heard or seen multiple times. It's just like, hey, good for you. Like, hey, listen, I've seen a fucking, are we allowed to curse? Sorry.
Yeah, we're cursing. There's a little, I don't even know if Tom, the other producer, see, there's another Tom, our digital content producer.
I know, I see Tom. About the
so there's a little box, and when he uploads it, he can check this box to make it explicit. So yeah,
okay,
you can curse.
So sorry other Tom. But yeah, it I don't even know what I was saying, but yeah, I lost my train of thought. It's funny.
Honestly, I did too.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my next question is about the production of Sunday Dinner. What were some of the most challenging aspects of the production?
I do remember what I was going to say, and I'll answer
okay,
that question.
Okay, go for it.
I was going to say, I've seen a bunch of sculptures of men naked doing something. That's what I was going to say, but it means nothing now. I should have said it and remembered it back then.
Wait, sculptures of men do it? As that relates to a goofy idea?
Yeah, I think I was relating it to, like, I've seen the same thing over and over again. It's just doing it in a different way. You know, if you do something that we understand, but you do it in a different way, that can hit us pretty hard sometimes. Does that make sense? Like, I've seen sculptures, the same fucking sculpture, but, like, for some reason,
I see what you mean. Yeah,
David, there's something about it, you know? Like, what Michelangelo did with the David, there's something about it. When you see it and the size of it, it's like, it's the same.
I think you should have prefaced that with, like, Michelangelo or, artistic sculpture.
Yes.
Cause
this is good editing. Yes.
Staring at a bunch of naked men sculptures, and it's like, where is he going with this?
This is my life, man. This is my life. This is like, let me get an idea.
Now.
And everyone's like, excuse me? Okay, let me backtrack and explain my idea. Yeah. I think good art is something that's familiar, but we're just seeing it in a just kind of different way. It hits you in a different way. So that's all I was saying. Your question.
Makes sense.
Your question.
My question was challenging aspects of filming Sunday Dinner. I know the camera went down. You got another one.
Yeah.
Anything else that was really challenging or interesting?
Honestly, no. I don't think there was anything where I was like, I think I was so, okay, yes, this was challenging for me personally. The personal thing that was challenging for me was splitting my brain up, trying to act in it and trying to kind of make sure we were covering everything and really relinquishing, you know, trusting Kevin that much to, like, Kevin and I had never worked together. I did trust him through the process of talking to him. I knew he was going to, you know, dot his I's and cross his T's and do everything, did his due diligence, was super prepared. But there's that, it's your baby. It's 7 years. You're actually doing it. It was really hard for me to split my brain up like that and just have like, I think I trusted them 95%, but I could see in my acting, there's that 5%. There's probably more of my brain being split in two different ways. It has nothing even to do with Kevin. It was just like, is that too dark over there? Can we see this? You know, like,
so you said you didn't direct it, but in a way you're thinking like a director.
Yes.
While trying to act.
Yes.
That's tough.
It's hard not to. If it's your baby, it's hard not to like, just be like, well, I don't direct, you know, this is your thing. So like, direct it however you want to, man. And Kevin was great to check in with me with stuff. Mm-hmm. And he made a really brilliant cut to the end that we kind of filmed it as scripted one way. And he's like, I think we can cut like 2 pages out of this thing. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, from here to here, you say all these things. I don't think we need to say anything. And there's a moment all the way at the end where we kind of just sit in silence. And I thought it was a real brilliant note because it felt so truthful. Like after something happens together, there is that kind of collective exhale moment before Mary says, or Bobby, and it says, you know, who wants tiramisu? There was like other lines there that were other like last callback jokes that like my sketch brain was like, ooh, this would be funny. And that did add to something. There was just, but he was just like, I don't think we need it, man. So that, you know, he made this, that really brilliant note. I would never have seen that being in it. Right. Like you needed someone outside of that. It was just hard for me being in it, starting to see, do we need this? Do we need that? There was supposed to be a total intro of like a lot of close-ups of like the food, of the corn, like just like the horn, and so we got some of that stuff in. But I wanted more ambiance and more kind of close-ups of grandparents, and that we just didn't have time for. That we were kind of rushing to film. Yeah. That we just kind of cut out. But it, for some reason, it was like important for me to be like, wait, no, this is how the intro should work. And then that intro was completely different. The intro, the slow pan back, was the coolest thing. I did not have that in my head. In my head, it was in my head is just, we didn't, how I wrote it was like, we didn't see anybody yet. We just saw close-ups of things. So the prayer's going on and you're just seeing the family built out piece by piece.
I love that shot you guys get when you're like tracking out of the shot.
So cool.
In the beginning, because you're like, it's intimate, but this is me going on a directing tangent, but like you're pulling away.
Yes.
And like, it's almost like your character is pulling away from the tradition with that. Yep. So like,
yeah, it was cool symbolism. I didn't know it at the time. Kevin would be like, I think we have a good, he's like, I think he was trying to tell me in a nice way, like, I don't know if we need these pickup shots or these inserts.
Right.
And I was like, I think we really do, man. Like it was like the end of the day. It was like the second day. Everyone's starting to go on. I was like, oh shit, we don't have time for X, Y, and Z. And he could see I was like getting bummed out. He's like, let's try to get some. Like, we'll just do like 5 second pan ups of some stuff. So he was very kind. And then I was like, oh yeah, we didn't need fucking any of that.
Oh well.
So it was like, it's hard to see. Yeah, you get panicked sometimes when you're in it. And then I think my acting got affected by that too, because I could see there are times, especially in the takes we didn't use too, where I was like, I could see it in my brain. I'm like hunched most of the movie.
I think that works though, because your character is like nervous about coming out as a vegan. So
you said it, man.
Like,
you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. I planned it the whole time.
Whether you did or not, it definitely works because you're stressed. You might not be stressed about the right thing, but so with the, let's talk about the pitch a little bit. Obviously we've written, you know, very detailed blog posts about why the pitch works, how it creates conflict, what the stakes of the film are. Go check those out on the blog. If you just search Don Finelli or Sunday Dinner on the blog,
and I've passed people along to that too. That's a great blog.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. People have reached out to me. I was like, they're like, what did you write? And I was just like, just go to this. Like this explains absolutely everything. I mean, better ways
and
I could probably explain it.
When people ask like for tips or examples, I usually send them that and a few other poster in the blog, be like, this is what our judges look for. And I think we've had some winners actually win recently based on reading those blogs and crafting their sentences. So everyone out there listening, definitely check out the blog. It's a very useful thing. especially the blog on Sunday Dinner. That's a really good one. I wrote it too because I'm an awesome writer. Tooting my own horn again. I don't write for the blog anymore, but yeah, I'm on like the 10 just out of like 10 toot meter today.
The coins just popping out every time. Just a yeah. little horn that's tooting.
Yeah. I'm editing this too, so maybe I'll put something in there. But the pitch, was that something that you workshopped specifically for the film fund, or did you have that most of that log line
nope.
down already?
Nope. That was specifically for you guys. I think sometimes, you know, there's places to repeat stuff. So if it's just like, what's this movie about? Like, you put the same log line, you put the same.
Right.
But for this one, it was so, I got to be honest. I was like, why the hell am I doing this? There's no way I'm going to win. I was like, there's no way they're going to pick this. I just had no confidence. I had no, yeah. absolutely no confidence that I would win. I think that helped because I was like, let me put the most clear pitch I could put together without putting any bells and whistles. I think that's what's yep. so great about this pitch, right? Because I think as filmmakers and art, you know, we could really be up our own asses so much and
oh yeah
and really put the extra flowers on the painting and really try to make it look pretty, and it's like strip all that away.
Yeah,
what's the movie
and our
about?
Very first winner, Tim Viola, he said the same thing. I was asking feedback from him, like, you know, what did you like about the film? And he's like, well, it really gave me a challenge to like drill down my log line and
exactly.
find out like what this film is actually about without any of the artistic fluff that you're
that
talking about.
And how to make it attractive too, right? You have to yes. like really choose your words carefully to go, okay, yeah, what's this about? Anybody can throw a log line of any movie that's just like, oh yeah, this girl gets swept up in a tornado and meets some real weirdos and you know, wants to get back home, is trying to get back home. And you're like, okay,
what,
you know, it's like not the best pitch for Wizard of Oz.
No.
So yeah, I think you got to choose your words. So, you know, that was just for you guys.
Awesome.
And I
Let's
know
read
I,
it real
ne-
quick.
I really needed a production. I know I needed a production designer
yeah.
that was really going to, you know, capture this.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to read the actual entries for the
sure.
listeners out there so they can see what you submitted. An Italian-American man confesses to his passionate siblings that he is now vegan and refuses to eat their traditional Sunday meatballs, and I need $ for a DP and production design.
Yeah.
And I think you hit the nail on the head there. Like, this Italian-American family, you were talking about the horn and the even though you didn't actually put them in the film, the inserts, the pickup shots, the food, like,
yeah.
all of that is so important. You need to nail that 100%.
Right.
So I think mentioning production design really sells this thing. Like, okay, Italian American, passionate. These people are, you know,
right.
maybe colorful and
mm-hmm.
and they have maybe religious things in there. So it just works.
Yeah.
So that's a great pitch, in my
Thanks,
opinion.
Thanks, man.
And our
Thanks
other
for
judges' opinion
it.
Too. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So what you may have already answered this, but what drew you to the film fund when you found out about it?
I think because it was, for me, the first time I saw, like, now being talking to you guys so much, I was like, oh, this is such a cool thing. But I'm guessing a lot of the times, and a lot of the people have submitted, and some of my friends have made it to the finals, which is cool. And I think it, when I saw it for the first time, it was so like, wow, that seems hard for me. Like, for me, it's like, that seems challenging.
Right.
I was like, for you submit to some other things, some are free, some are a little bit more money. This seemed to be like a good deal to and a challenging. It was just challenging for me. I think there was something that tickled me, that was like, I suck at tweeting. Okay.
Yeah.
So like, I was like that. I think that's why I didn't have the confidence in this. Like, it's hard for me to like reduce down my ideas into clear thoughts, and it scared me. To be honest with you. And I think that's why I had to do it. I think I was just terrified. And I was like, you know, fuck it. Let me just try. And I was desperate too. I needed money, man. I didn't have, to make this thing the way I wanted it to look. I know I needed some help. I really needed some help. And doing so much research into these things, I was like, wait, people spend how much on short films? Like, I've spent like a couple hundred dollars on my past short films, like, and of course they don't look great, but I was like, if for people to take you seriously, like, I think sometimes are gone are the days, you know, of the Duplass Brothers early stuff, or you know, you filming that, there's that early, you know, Clerks, you know, I see it behind you, and and there's that raw footage film that gets into the festivals. I think maybe the new is like, hey, this is all filmed on an iPhone. I think there's like, that's the next generation of things. But even then, they look beautiful, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I was watching this one ad for, it was like for some car commercial. It may have been Bentley. It was like shot on iPhone. And then I saw some BTS behind the scenes of that shoot. They spent like hundreds of thousands of dollars. Maybe I'm exaggerating the budget. I don't know. But like thousands on rigs and lighting and everything. So it's like, even then, it's still shot on iPhone. You still have big crews and thousands being thrown at this thing.
Right. So yeah, I just feel like gone are the days of, I mean, a lot of the indie stuff is see you later, but I think there's such my experience going through the film festival, because this was my first kind of rodeo with that as well. There are so many talented, so many passionate filmmakers on the unseen level, right? On just the film festival circuit, you know, there's, of course, you're going to see some head scratchers. I'm sure people watch my film and I was like, eh, whatever, you know, but most of the time, like, you're like, shit, man, there's some really good filmmakers out here. Like, people that are trying to say something that just look right. A lot of great documentary filmmakers, which I'm always like, so impressed by. To go back to your question, I was scared, intimidated, and there's something that tickled me when I saw it that was like, I don't think I can win this, but I think this would be a really healthy, cool way. And it was short, too. It's just like, hey, give us the bare bones. That's it. It's not like, who are you? What's your passions in life? You know, some other film funds and stuff like that, some other places that are giving grants, I mean, you have to submit a ton of stuff.
20 pages. I submitted a grant, and I did it in college. That was 20 pages.
Yeah. So I think I was also coming off of one of those where I was like, well, this is a breath of fresh air, and it scared the shit out of me. So I think that combination was just like, I mean, why not do it?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, there is a chance. Like, why not do it? You don't have to tell them who you are and all your passions. You just need to tell them as clear as possible. Tell you guys, like, this is what the film's about. This is what I need the money for.
That's it, baby.
That's it.
You pretty much answered this in the last question, but what would you say your favorite thing is about the film fund?
Oh, man. Well,
besides getting to talk to me and my
my favorite thing, I mean, it truly was the ease of working with you guys. I mean, one, getting selected, that was unbelievably unexpected. It helped so much. I mean, it took the film to the next level. I mean, it could not have looked, and it just wouldn't have been without this. So it's like, I'm forever humbled and thankful for that.
Happy to help.
Yeah. The favorite thing was working with you guys and how simple the process was, to be honest with you. There's no, like, I don't know. You get into some of these things, you go like, is this a scam? You know, it's like, sometimes you're like, you just, I don't know, especially from like where we are, where we're from, like we don't trust anyone.
No.
So it was a real breath of fresh air to, like,
yeah,
you know, talk to you guys and just be like, yeah, like, happy to help. Like, it was just so, there wasn't any like agita, there wasn't any, you know, anything where I was like, this seems weird, or like, there's something off about this. Everything was like clear, upfront, honest, easy. And when you have all of the other stuff that you've worried about with filmmaking, to have the people that are giving you money be easy, I think that's just such a rare thing.
Awesome. I'm so glad you found it easy and simple, and everything you just said, I'll just repeat back. But it's great to know. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask, just the marketing curiosity, I mean, how did you find out about the film fund?
I truly I don't. Oh, no. I do remember. I think you were on some sort of list. I think I was looking up like top, you know, top funds for films. I was, you know, I was a desperate man looking for needing help. Cause I think at this point, like I had a director on, like, so this went through a bunch of different directors and went through a bunch of things over the 7 years, but I finally had a director on. So I was like, and we kind of put a budget out and I was like, oh dude, I need help. And, so I was kind of just looking through and I think you were on like a top five, you know, top 10 list. And I think I went through a couple and I was like, this is hard. I mean, this is a tough, hey, it should be right. Like I wasn't complaining. I was like, they're going to give me, you know, a couple grand. I gotta put some work into this and really, you know, I did an Italian American fund. I did, that was so much work and didn't get it. And then I was just so exhausted. And then, you know, I think you were on that. Yeah, I think you were, I'm pretty sure you're on one of those lists.
Awesome. Yeah, we're like, on a few. There's like a Kit Split post us, No Film School post us.
I think that was it. I think that was it.
Okay.
Yeah. No Film School.
Yeah, they're great. We love No Film School. They're the first film organization that featured us. I mean,
that's awesome.
I'm tooting the Film Fund's horn. It's broken at this point, but I was about to say we've been featured by Sundance, we've been featured by AT&T, Film Independent, but No Film School, they were the first ones who featured us. So I just want to profusely thank them for getting our name out there too.
It's just, they're awesome. I mean, I've also just like learned stuff from them. So
yes,
it's a great, you don't know how to website. Do stuff. Yeah. You're deathly afraid of telling anybody like, I don't know what I'm doing, but it's like, no one really does until you do it. So,
exactly.
And if you have resources of people that have gone through, that have walked over the coals, you know, and walked through the fire, then yeah, I'm going to listen to them.
Absolutely.
And try to take some of that. Yeah. So yeah, I'm pretty sure it was their website.
Cool. I want to pivot away from Sunday Dinner for a minute. You have a bunch of other stuff you're working on too. You mentioned to me scripts you sold in the past, some acting roles.
Yep.
What do you want to talk about? What do you give us? Tell us a little bit about those experiences if you can.
I was on smaller TV shows like 30 Rock and Broad City, but that's a lot of my stuff is just like some of my friends got famous and brought me on. And so some things I've auditioned for that I've gotten, like Orange is the New Black, but then like Broad City, I know Abby and Alana through UCB and was on their on their web series, Broad City, you know, and so I didn't really need to audition for that. But I got a series regular role on this show called Nightcap. That was really awesome. I got to improvise so much. And with all these celebrities, it was, no one really watched the show. It was on Pop TV, like right when Pop TV was just starting to come out. It was like us and Schitt's Creek. That's it. See who won that race. But yeah, it was such a cool experience though. It was a really fun to just like shoot a whole TV show and just get to improvise with all these kind of celebrities that were coming in. It was like a Larry Sanders show. It was like a behind the scenes of a talk show. And I was kind of like the talk show host who you never saw. Is like kind of crony that kept popping into like the writer's room. And it was Allie Wentworth, and I got a shout out, you know, Allie, and she was amazing, to work with, and, Tom and Brad who ran the show. And it was a dope experience. I was bummed that, we didn't get past the second season, understood, but it was still like just kind of a dream job. And just, you know, they just let me go loose. Like after the first day or so, they were just like, oh yeah, you say whatever you want to them, you know, like,
oh wow,
we need to go from here to here, can you do that? Like once I prove that they're like, the goal of the scene is to piss them off or like suck up to them or whatever it was, they would give me the intention, maybe a couple lines to hit very specifically, and then they were like in between,
wow,
like, just react, do whatever you want. And they use so many of the improvised moments.
That's great.
In the actual show, so that was really cool. But I had to pivot to writing when I get out to LA because the acting kind of dried up. You kind of have to start over out here. I knew so many casting directors out in New York. I would still audition for stuff out in New York, but it's a lot of local hire stuff, which means they ain't flying you out. Like it's basically like, if you do get this part, you're going to have to come out yourself. So I was really trying to restart, re-meeting people. My timing was always a little off. I did like the Just for Last festival in Montreal through a character in their characters division. So I got some meetings after that, but I didn't move out to LA after that. Like all my meetings were like with LA people, And then I stayed in New York for another 2 years. So it's like, you come back out, like, people move on. Like, most of the people aren't still there. Like, people have to understand that executives and directors and people jump to different places all the time. So it's, you kind of have to get your bearings down. Like, always had good meetings with people. It's just a very, it's a very out of your hands industry. You can only do so much as an actor. Whereas a writer, I think you can always be writing. Like, technically, you could always be acting as an actor. You can put together side stuff. But as a writer, like, you're, it's really in your control. Obviously, when you put it out to the world, it is out of your control, just like acting. But I think I liked the control part because coming out to LA, just, it's so much bigger. Everyone's doing it out here. And I got a little overwhelmed with, like, feeling like I needed to restart. I was like, oh, I did this for like 6-7 years. Like, was auditioning for some of the top casting directors in New York. And I was like, oh, I got to start writing more. So I started my podcast up again, which is called The Need to Fail. So I did a bunch of those.
How long have you been in LA now?
I've been out in LA, I guess, for like 5 years now. Almost 5 years. Yeah. So it, and everyone says, like, it's going to take you a while. I mean, it takes a while. Like, even if you were, unless you're like coming off like a huge TV show and, or a movie or something, you got a lot of heat behind you. Sure. Anything is easier then. Mm-hmm. But I think if you're just trying to make a jump, and like, my wife's in the industry too. So she was writing for a TV show out here. She's writing for another one now. And yeah, it's the pivoting to writing was really fun. I think, and just scratched another itch. And that was another thing. It was like, my sister's a writer and I was always like, well, I'm the math guy and the funny one.
Right.
The actor, she's the writer, she's the poet. You know, I don't have any writing skills. I was kind of dyslexic as a kid a little bit. Okay. My reading comprehension was horrible. So I was always like, I can't write. That's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But when you're forced to do it, when things dry up and you're kind of forced to do it. Yeah. Like, my wife and I sold a movie when we were, we had a 4 week old. So
Are you able to talk about that experience at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we sold the movie to Nickelodeon, and again, listen, we've been lucky in the UCB community that we were able to kind of know a lot of people from Funny or Die and also College Humor. There's, that's kind of like the strong comedy communities that are outside of our kind of live community, and with where we know friends. And so yeah, we just stay friendly with so many people. That's how I know Darren, and Darren was at UCB, but, you know, he's doing Funny or Die stuff, Kevin as well. So same thing with, like, someone from College Humor went off in a production company and was just like, hey, Nickelodeon's looking for teen stuff, and I know you guys, like, my wife and I write together as well. So it's like, I know you guys are just easy to work with, and if you want to come up with some log lines, I could throw them out, and if they're interested, maybe we'll come up with like a pitch. And we were just having our kid, and it was like just before we had our kid. It was like 2 months before we had our kid. I put some log lines together for TV shows, movies, and they really liked one TV show idea I had as a movie idea. So that was it was basically like a Footloose meets, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie The Wizard, where it's about video games, but it's about it, like a town that like forbids video games.
Okay.
So these kids go on this, and cell phones and stuff. So these kids, these gamers, go on this like 80s adventure without their phones to go to Boston to try to enter this video game tournament to prove like video games are fun and cool.
Right. Cool.
So it was like one of those. So yeah, the process was just.
Are they producing it?
It was on the short list before COVID. Now that COVID hit, I don't know.
Yeah. I guess we'll see.
We will see. I hope they do. It was a really, that was a dope process.
Yes.
Yeah.
One last question for you. Two-part question. What advice would you give to prospective filmmakers and those who are looking to enter the film fund contests?
Be comfortable with being uncomfortable. As the first part of your question. I think anybody doing anything artistic, you can be in the flow state, which is magical. And I think anybody that has done stuff like this knows what I'm talking about, where everything's just clicking and you're kind of time stops. And you, whether you're a writer or an actor or a producer, like, everything's just like, you're so in the present moment and the flow is there. Things are just happening. Things are coming out of you. You don't know where they're coming from. I would say 90% of the time, maybe this is just for me, it's an agonizing, uncomfortable look in the mirror. Like, you're just looking at yourself in the mirror and you're seeing all the faults and you're just like, this is too hard. This is like, this sucks. I don't know. It's kind of like your car is stalled. You're having to push it. It's this heavy thing. It feels this weighted down exercise that you have to do to kind of get over your nerves of being bad or being judged or being wrong. And you have to really embrace that uncomfortable feeling. It's really hard, but like, you just have to feel uncomfortable a lot of the times when you're making art, especially with rewrites, editing. These are not easy processes. You're killing darlings. You're confused. You're mostly like, most of the time it's like mixing paint together and it's just like, this doesn't look good.
Right.
So you have to be patient and feel that uncomfortable nature. There's this like really arduous period of making anything artistic, I think, that's like, shit is just messy. It doesn't look right, but it started from a real fun place, and you imagine it ending at a really fun place, but there's this middle period of just shit, and it doesn't feel good. So sometimes you sit down as a writer and you go like, I don't want to edit this act. I don't know where things go. Like, there's too many notes. And it's just kind of a one foot in front of the other thing. Like, take a deep breath and know that you're not always going to be in that flow state. When it happens, embrace it, go with it, work for 3 hours and it's going to feel like 5 minutes. But most of the time, it's kind of a little bit of a grind. If you want to do this for a living, like, any good work, I think, is like, you love doing it, but it's really, there's a resistance to doing it at times. And that's self-imposed a lot of the time. Almost all of the time.
I definitely resonate with that. I mean, I wrote a couple of feature scripts in college and I put them away in a drawer and I took them out maybe a month or so ago and I read them and I was like, okay, well, these are not great, but I think there's something here. And it's like, do I go into them and start revising the whole thing and start editing it, or do I start from scratch? So I definitely understand that arduous kind of shit period where you're like, you have a kernel of something but you need to polish it and make it better, and it's definitely hard.
You're also like not special, which is a good thing to remind yourself. I'm not saying you are not, but like, we're all like not as important and special as we think in the moment. Like, this isn't that important. It feels so important to you, it feels so right to you, but at the end of the day, no one really gives a shit. So you think they do. Like, you think there's all these people watching you in your room writing. Like, no one's thinking about you. No one cares. It sounds harsh. It sounds kind of fatalistic or just mean. But it's true. And at least for me, that takes some of the burden off to be like, no one's in my room with me now. Except my fucking dog sleeping under, you know, like, there's no one here. I can do this right now. And there's different methods on how to work, you know. There's like the 25-minute, 5-minute off method, and I think it's like the Pomodoro method, and there's all little things that you could kind of research to kind of get over your demons with that. But what you went through is like, so many other people went through that too, which is like, I did this thing in the past, it's probably shit, but then you look at it and you're like, yeah, it's kind of shitty, but I love this scene, you know. So it's
right,
like,
exactly, definitely get that.
Yeah, what do you do with that? And it's like, I don't know, you know. You try one way. Like, yeah, start rewriting it and put that scene in a new thing.
Yeah. Don, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to wrap up here. I will plug your social media channels.
I'm not on too much. I'm on Instagram mostly, at Don Finelli.
Okay.
I'm on Twitter a little bit, at Don Finelli as well.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. At Don Finelli on Twitter and Instagram. I want to thank everyone for listening and remind you that the Spring 2021 Narrative Documentary Contests are opening soon. So be sure to check out thefilmfund.co to submit your entries. And check out our social channels, at The Film Fund on Instagram, Simply Film Fund on Twitter, and Film Fund Co. on Facebook. You can get prizes such as up to $10,000 in cash to make your film, or equipment rentals. And we have to work out the exact sponsors, but we will get them to you in future episodes. So Kitchblick gift cards, I know we have them. So check the website regularly for the most up-to-date info on all that. Check out our blog with great filmmaking and producing tips, trying to keep this under an hour. So we have 30 seconds left. Newsletter, follow us on social. Plug the ebook. The ebook, we have an awesome ebook on the pre-production process. Learn everything about pre-producing and everything you do before you hit record. And we have merch, thefilmfund.co/merchandise. Pay for episodes like this and support the community. I want to thank everyone again for listening. Tune in every Friday for new episodes. Don, you have 10 seconds. Do you want to add anything else?
Guys, let's be kind to each other, please.
I love it. Be kind. All right, Don. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, man.
Talk to you soon.